supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we were stumped a couple weeks ago when a listener tried to get me to explain what a wild American strawberry was. Well, now we think we know, and we will reveal all when we get to the question of the week. Up to then, it's a fascinating phone call show, and you know what that means, cats and kittens. Lots of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Sean, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thanks.
The reason I'm calling is... Oh, sorry.
I was going to say thank you for making it. And where are you, man?
I'm in Hubert, North Carolina.
Okay, I don't know where Hubert is.
It's near the coast. It's near the town of Jacksonville, near the military base.
Oh, how close to the water?
I'm probably about 10 miles from the water.
What can we do for Sean in Hubert, North Carolina?
I received a baby oak tree as a graduation present about a year ago. And I put it in a pot, about a 6-inch pot. And it's been there going on now a year and a half. And I'm ready to go ahead and transplant it. But I'm just wondering if it's too late in the season to transplant it.
No, actually, this is a perfect time of year to plant a tree. Now, what time of year did you receive the tree?
It would have been in the spring of last year.
Spring of last year. So where did the pot sit during these months or like 18 months?
It's been in our sunroom, so we make sure it's watered every day, gets plenty of sunlight. We usually put it outside once or twice a week, but other than that, it's been in the sunroom.
Okay, and it's done well.
It's still alive, let me put it that way.
Right. It should never have been watered every day. That's much too much, especially plants that are designed to develop an awesome root system like an oak. They want a nice, good soaking soil. Then they want that soil to dry out and then a week later to be soaked again. That's the ideal situation. But this is a deciduous tree that needs seasonality. You got it through one winter, it sounds like, but it for the next winter, this coming winter, it really wants to be outside.
I'm actually transplanting it to the yard itself.
Excellent. So have you got a spot picked out?
Yes, I do. However, the biggest problem that we have with our yard is, especially considering how close we are to the ocean, is our yard tends to be kind of salty and has a lot of sand.
Sandy, I understand, but you say salty. You can taste the salt in rain and wind? You're that close?
Occasionally, depending on how bad the wind and the rain is and how fast it's moving, you can occasionally taste the salt in the air. In the backyard is the ideal place where there's not a lot of wind.
Okay, and is there good sun in the backyard?
Yes, it's pretty much a full day.
The great news is that this is the perfect time of year to plant a tree. The survival rate for trees that are planted in the fall, especially the early fall, is much higher than plants that go in the spring, especially in a climate like yours where summer can suddenly warm up and get really torrid.
Right.
Your tree will have the winter to go dormant, which it's been trying to do. This poor thing is sleep deprived. And then when it wakes up, it'll have some good root growth established and it'll do some more root growth before summer comes a calling. So what you want to do is you want to go out and pick a nice area and then you want to dig a wide hole, but not a deep one. There will be a point down at the bottom of the trunk where you see the root flare begin, where the trunk stops being a lollipop and becomes this muscular structure.
Right.
You want that structure above ground. You want the roots below ground, but you want that musculature above the ground. That's how you do a good, healthy tree. Even though it seems counterintuitive, you want to plant it high. Now, you have really sandy soil. The normal advice is not to improve the soil in the planting hole. But when people say that, they're mostly talking about clay soils. So I want you to go out and get a big load of yard waste compost.
Okay.
Or, if you can't find any, the blackest, richest topsoil you can find. And it should be black when it's dry. That's the way to tell good quality soil. Compost would be better. So take an area, maybe about four or five times the size of your planting area, and do a 50-50 mix where when you're done, you've got half compost and half sand. Then plant the tree in the middle of this island with the root flare showing above ground, and then mulch it beginning 6 inches away from the trunk. You don't want to ever cover that root flare. Mulch it with more compost or the black topsoil. And then I want you to get a garden hose, take it there, set it to drip, and let it just drip at the base of that plant, just like one drip every 2 minutes, and do that for 24 hours. Of course, unless you're lucky and God's smiling on you and it starts a gentle rain as soon as you finish planting.
Okay.
And then redo that drip every like 5 to 7 days if we don't get rain. Don't let it go long periods without water this fall or over the winter, because winter can be dry. And be really aware of watering when things start to warm up in the spring. Don't water if we get rain, but once a week, it's great to have that hose drip. And the first time is for 24 hours. After that, you would let the hose drip for a couple of hours. But that's the idea. Really saturate that soil and then let it dry out for 5 to 7 days. And I think you're going to have a winter.
All right. I appreciate it.
All right. Good luck with your oak tree, pal.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
1-888-346-9499. Eileen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you, Eileen. How are you?
I'm doing well.
And where is Eileen well?
Eileen is well in Green Creek, New Jersey, a little town in Cape May County, probably 5 miles from the ocean.
What can we do for Eileen in beautiful Cape May, the land of the painted ladies?
My husband and I bought a fig tree about 7 years ago and planted it in our backyard. We get sun from all directions all day, and it has grown to a beautiful height. It's very full, lots of leaves, but not one fig. At the end of last year's growing season, the branches turned like a gray, and my husband in the spring this year thought it's a goner, and he was ready to get rid of it. But I noticed that from the center down at the bottom was new growth of leaves. So now we again have our beautiful fig tree leaves, but no figs.
Yeah, no, you have a very common problem. Now, this fig tree is in a very exposed area that you've identified.
Yes.
What happens with fig trees is typically over the winter, even in a non-culling winter, they will suffer some amount of dieback. And then in the spring, depending on how much old growth they have and new growth, that's going to decide for you how many figs you get. The smart money would go back in time and plant your fig closer to the house. Believe it or not, being closer to the structure in a somewhat protected area, especially with ocean winds, the winds down there when they pick up can be enormous. Closer to the house, you'd probably be eating figs right now as we're talking.
Wow.
But since it's out in the open, and I doubt that you're going to move it, you have two choices. How tall is this thing? It sounds like it's pretty big.
Well, I'm about 5'8", and it's probably just about as tall as I am.
Okay, that's not bad. The smartest thing you could do would be to get your husband to pound some stakes into the ground about a foot away from this plant on all sides. Wrap burlap around the stakes, not around the tree itself. And then throw a loose piece of burlap over the top. Just protection from the winter wind. Just breaking the wind. It will prevent it from the drying and freezing cold winds. And then as soon as things warm up in the spring, you go out and you remove that protection and you prune away any parts that don't look good. Any parts that are clearly dead or damaged. And then you'll be starting out with enough biomass that the tree will have plenty of time to finish up the growth it needs and then set a really good crop of figs. You said your tree is about 5-6 years old?
7 years, actually.
If you protect it this winter and give it a nice haircut in the spring, just when it starts greening up, you know what I mean, when you see the real new green growth?
Yes, yes.
Give it a good haircut then, removing all the old dead wood, I virtually guarantee you will have a flood of figs in August.
My heavens, I'll send you some.
But see, that's it. In general, in dicey climates, you want to plant these in a protected area, like next to a wall or close to the house, and give them some winter protection, and prune them every spring, but only prune them in the spring. If you prune them in the fall, then they have no protection against the winter wind. You leave even the bad stuff standing now, because that's going to take the punch.
Okay.
And then in the spring, you give it a real revitalization. You get into that, you'll get figs every season.
Okay.
All right?
Well, I can't wait. Well, I can't wait.
Get that hubby out there pounding them steaks. Men got to be good for something.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Hi, this is Mike's producer, Alexis Landis. While he takes a short break, I have breaking news. Mike will be the lead speaker for the Cape May Food Day celebration on Friday, October 10th. The outdoor and indoor event will feature talks by Mike, cooking demonstrations, and a farmer's market. The event runs from 11 to 3 at the Cape May County Extension Office in Cape May Courthouse, New Jersey. But don't go looking for all the details on the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with the mysterious Wild American Strawberry and lots more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Alexis Landis, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Grand American Tours. In July of 2015, Mike McGrath will be hosting a Viking river cruise through the gardens of Provence. More at 800-423-0247 or grandamericantours.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up a little later in the show, we were stumped by a listener who wanted to know more about the wild American strawberry. Well, so did we. So we looked it up, and we think we figured out what the gentleman meant. You will see if you agree with us when we get to the question of the week. In the meantime, we're taking lots of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Steve, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being had. Steve, where are you?
We're up in Bethlehem. Just bought a house a year ago.
Okay, because so you're not from the area originally?
I'm from Lehigh Valley originally.
And you don't call it Bethlehem?
No, not. I'm from Easton, but we call it Bethlehem.
I guess Philadelphia is where we tend to drop lots of letters out of words, yeah.
No, they do up here, too.
All right. What can we do for Steve in the Christmas City, I believe, right?
That's right. Yeah.
All right.
We ripped out a bunch of bushes around the house. It was a foreclosure. And according to your instructions, on August 15th, we composted with healthy compost from the woods of Zionsville and planted. Then we watered 2 times a day. We work long hours, so kind of before the sun rose and often after the sun set. We think that may be where we went wrong. 2 weeks later, we overseeded and composted just the whole lawn.
Right.
And everything was growing fine. Then we developed kind of this soapy webbing, and it turned brown and thatched. Thought maybe brown thatch or Scythian blight. And recently did Dr. Earth's fungicide. Just wanted to get your perspective if there's anything we can do to not kill our new grass.
Okay, so you moved into a place, and following my advice, which is the advice for cool season lawns, you started to prepare the site on August 15th.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually you laid down a bunch of compost and you sowed grass seed into that, or you overseeded existing grass?
We did two parts. So where we had ripped out bushes along the house, we did the sowing.
Right.
And then about 2 weeks later, just for the heck of it, sowed the whole lawn, put a compost down to feed it because it probably had never been fed, and then just overseeded the whole lawn and commenced watering twice a day. This is about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Right, but you stopped when the grass came up.
Well, that might be where we went wrong.
Oh, okay.
When do you stop?
When the grass comes up.
When you start to see a little haze, or when it's a quarter inch long?
It's an art. You know, I had the same problem when I had a helper this time for the first time this year, and I said, okay, I want you to prune the peach trees. And he goes, how do you do that? And I go, I don't know. I've been doing it for 10 years, and I never really, really thought about it consciously. You just watch what's happening. So,
okay. So you should have maybe stopped. We should have maybe stopped on the areas that were maybe about an inch long. When do you suggest cutting?
You wait until the grass is a good 4.5 inches high, and then you cut it with a very sharp blade to be 3 inches.
Okay, I'm doing the 3 inches, and it was sharp, but I cut it too soon.
Oh,
I think number one.
Okay. Now, did you feed it?
We fed it with compost, nothing additional.
Okay, that's good. And you say you have thatch, which would be almost impossible. Thatch would be a dead layer of stolons, brown stolons at the soil line.
It almost creates like just these little patches. We thought maybe it was brown patch.
Mm-hmm.
Where it dies after those webbings disappear. These little patches, almost like a dog would have peed there for years.
Right. Well, you know, there's so many things that can go wrong with lawns. There's what are called fairy rings. There's brown patch. There's all kinds of a blight.
So what we've done in the area is I sprayed this fungicide with just essential oils from Dr. Earth.
Okay.
And I scratched the soil and replanted some seed and see if we can get it to go again.
Okay. Yes. I don't know about a fungicide with essential oils. I tend to think that most of these problems are cultural. You know, it was already a pretty wet year. This was a year where a lot of supplemental watering wasn't needed. But I think you have done the right thing in that you, and I'm guessing the great Karnak imagines that you had seed left over.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yes.
Which is why you spread more seed. So that was a good coincidence. Well, I think that's the right approach. I think if anything, you go out and get another bag of this seed. You really can't overdo that, especially in the shady areas where you want this fescue to grow in very thickly.
Okay.
And no more supplemental water unless we go through a real dry spell, which is unlikely. Less water is more, especially in the shady areas. And just let it chill, let it grow, and don't pay too close attention to it. And if it gets to 4.5 inches, cut it back again to 3. But mostly try to stay off of it, spread more seed, think good thoughts, and spring will tell the tale. A lot of times, even if it is a disease like this, the grass can literally outgrow it.
Oh, I really appreciate it. Thanks. Love the show.
And congratulations on your new home.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Tara, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Tara. How are you?
I am doing well.
And where is Tara doing well?
I am in the Reading, Pennsylvania area.
Okay, very good. Home of the Reading Phillies, who I think now we have to call them the Fightin' Phils or something
yes,
like that.
Yes, the Fightin' Phils.
Yeah, very good, very good. What can we do for Tara in Reading?
Well, I want to thank you for taking my call. I just started gardening this year. I started my first garden, and I've learned a lot. But one problem I've been having, I've been trying to garden organically, and I have string beans that are being just demolished by ladybugs. I can't find anything that will stop them from eating my string bean leaves.
Well, you don't have ladybugs. There are two creatures who look like ladybugs a little bit, but are destructive. And you have what's known as the Mexican bean beetle. And, of course, ladybugs only eat aphids and other insect prey. So you would never mistake a true ladybug for a Mexican bean beetle. Although I will tell you, the adults look remarkably similar. They are both true beetles. They look, you know, they got the spots and everything. But one easy way to tell them apart is those slimy little larvae. Aren't they worse than the adults? Or don't they creep you out?
Yes.
Squeezy and squirmy and ew. They actually really creep me out.
Okay.
Now, did you grow what are called pole beans that need to be supported, or did you grow bush beans that, you know, are upright plants?
They were whole beans.
Pole beans. So you ran them up a trellis?
Yes.
And what kind of trellising did you use?
I kind of made my own concoction with bamboo.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that shouldn't have harmed anything. And are you growing in flat ground, or did you build raised beds?
Flat ground.
Okay. That's something you can improve on as, you know, or any kind of gardener, organic or otherwise. Flat earth gardening is rarely going to be half as successful as growing in raised beds. So you're growing in flat earth. Did you improve the soil at all? Did you till it up? Did you put anything in it? Did you feed your plants?
Yes, I did till it, and I mixed in dehydrated manure.
Okay, that was a remarkably poor idea.
Oh.
Yes. Horse manure and poultry manure especially are really only suitable for growing sweet corn and for lawns. They really only supply nitrogen, and they don't supply a lot of the other nutrients. And I'm presuming you went out and bought a pack of string bean seeds?
Actually, the plants, seedlings.
This is relatively new, and I'm not sure I like this idea of selling crops that are typically direct seeded already started. Because that's, you bought little string bean plants?
Yes.
Yeah, you had everything going against you. And the reason I'm going to suggest you had the Mexican bean beetles attack is your plants were probably really stressed. So what I'm going to suggest is, first of all, you know, at the end of this season, over the winter, even next season, build a couple of raised beds. Isolate some areas that are no wider than 4 feet. They can be as long as you want, although 4x8 is a popular size. Build the soil up with them. This fall, shred up a lot of leaves and make your own compost or find a good local source of compost. In Reading, you should be able to find aged mushroom soil even from an organic mushroom farm. Reading is like the second biggest mushroom producer in the country.
So, yes, I know some places.
I bet you do. I bet you know them when the wind changes. Even.
Yes.
And next year, buy a bag of seeds. String beans do best when they're direct seeded. Plant the string beans, you know, about the seeds about 6 inches apart right around your trellis. And then if you have half-aged mushroom soil and half-native soil in there, you're going to get great results. You won't have to feed them. And then get a good pressurized sprayer. And if these creatures show up again next year, and now you know what they look like, which is really important. Just spray them off the plants with sharp streams of water first thing in the morning. And then, even in Reading, even if you're in the city, put some bird baths in the soil, just the saucers of the bird baths.
Yeah.
And get toads to come into your garden. Toads are the greatest controller of Mexican bean beetles and the Colorado potato beetle, which is the other pest that looks like a ladybug.
Oh, okay.
All right, Tara?
All right, thank you so much.
All right, good luck.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Mario, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Who are you, Mike? How are you today?
I am doing just fine, Mario. How are you, sir?
Very well, very well.
And where is Mario very well?
I am in Audubon, New Jersey.
Okay, well, there you go. I mean, you know, Audubon, named after the famous naturalist. You must be lousy with birds, one would hope.
One would hope.
Yeah. So what can we do for Mario in Audubon?
I have a question about my white pine tree in my backyard. It's about 30 feet tall. I'm concerned about it because the needles are spotted throughout that are brown. The trunk looks fairly healthy, and I read that if the needles turn brown from the outside in, it could be a problem. If they turn brown from the outside of the tree out, not to worry. But I'm still concerned about the tree. It's a beautiful tree. It looks fairly healthy, but there's clumps of brown pine needles that looks like there's a problem going on. I just moved into the home about 2 years ago, so I'm not really familiar.
Now,
you know,
wasn't there a bed of needles underneath it when you moved in?
No, because actually there is ivy spotted throughout underneath there, and so if there is a bed of needles, it's spotted throughout the ivy, so it's not really super noticeable.
Okay, so has it occurred to you that the ivy's a bad idea?
Yes, and I did do a lot. I pulled a ton of the ivy away today.
Well, it should not be anywhere near where it can reach the trunk.
Okay.
You know, if your white pine is 30 feet tall, it has an extensive root system that goes out, you know, in many cases as far underground as the furthest branch goes out upstairs. So, and ivy is a tremendous competitor for food and water. And when it gets on the trunk, it keeps the trunk damp. So, really, there should be at least a foot of open space all around the trunk.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now, some needles underneath the white pine are not only natural, they're like, that's the way it is. People think of evergreens as like developing a set of needles when they're little baby trees and then dying with all of those needles like 150 years later. But actually, evergreens are constantly replacing their needles. Many species do this so slowly that we don't really notice it. Some, like the white pine, are a little bit more drama queen about it and will seem to have a large percentage of their needles turn brown. And that's how they develop. There should be, man, if that's a 30-foot-tall tree, there should be a couple of feet of pine needles underneath that thing, unless somebody's been removing them. Now, there's ivy out there. Is there a lawn out there?
Yes.
And is the lawn treated?
I put some starter fertilizer and some lime down. Not a ton. Didn't go crazy.
And chemical fertilizer.
I think it was the crystallized, the slow release, what they say.
Mario, chemical fertilizer.
Okay.
Okay. So if you continue to use these toxic salts on your lawn, even if the white oak is okay now, you're going to kill it. You got to get your lawn off drugs. You haven't fed it for the fall yet, have you?
No, and they did tell me that that's probably one of the most important feedings.
It is.
Feed it.
It is. And you can either go out and buy a bagged organic lawn fertilizer, you can spread corn gluten meal on it, or you can spread compost all over it.
Okay.
That and moving the ivy away is the most protective thing. Now, you haven't been spraying herbicides around to kill weeds or anything, have you?
No.
Good.
No.
Good. Okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to pull that ivy back to a foot all around the trunk. We're going to go natural with the lawn, except for the improvement. You won't notice any difference. And then we're going to see how the tree looks in the spring. My white pine has given me spielkas every once in a while because there is a disease called needle cast that can be very deadly to these evergreens. But white pines can do a darn good rollover dead impression and be perfectly healthy. So you may, in the spring, suddenly notice it's, you know, it's like when you recover from an injury. You always knew you were hurting. But, you know, it may be a month after you get better and you go, hey, you know, my arm doesn't hurt anymore.
Gotcha.
So in the spring, you may look at this tree and it may be absolutely beautiful. And the odds are that it will be.
Mike, thank you so much. And I'm going to do, I wrote down what you told me to do and I'm going to get out there and take care of it. Hopefully she'll look nice and we got the problem solved.
All right. Good luck, Mario.
Thank you, Mike. Take care now.
Hi, this is Mike's producer, Alexis Landis. While he takes another of his famous short breaks, I want to remind you of our breaking news. Mike will be the lead speaker for the Cape May Food Day celebration on Friday, October 10th from 11 to 3 at the Cape May County Extension Office in Cape May Courthouse, New Jersey. The outdoor and indoor event will feature talks by Mike, cooking demonstrations, a farmer's market, and more. That's Friday, October 10th at the Cape May County Extension Office in Cape May Courthouse, New Jersey. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with the plant that Mike thinks is the mysterious Wild American Strawberry. And more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Alexis Landis, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Grand American Tours. In July of 2015, Mike McGrath will be hosting a Viking river cruise through the gardens of Provence. More at 800-423-0247 or grandamericantours.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will answer a question from a phone call we got weeks ago, which is actually ahead of our normal speed, when we investigate the mysterious plant our caller called the Wild American Strawberry. We'll let you know what we found out about this Native American beauty after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Kyle, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. It's a pleasure to speak to you. I'm a longtime listener and a first-time caller.
Well, thank you for calling, Kyle. It's a pleasure to speak with you. Where are you?
I'm in Mertztown, Pennsylvania.
Okay, very good. And what can we do for Kyle in Mertztown?
Well, I have a question about, I imagine you've probably done it too. I bought a pack of seeds that just called my name, and now I have about 30 bottleneck gourds, and I don't know what to do with them.
Oh, excellent. So like dipper gourds, birdhouse gourds, the kind
of... Yeah.
You know, before we had like metal implements and, you know, when glassware was really expensive and ceramic was really expensive, you know, these gourds were used for the storage of liquids, made into ladles, carved into birdhouses, you know, just tremendous.
The first time I noticed them was at the Williamsburg Gardens, and I thought, well, they must be an old plant that was used for something. You know, they don't grow things down there for, you know, just beauty.
Oh, no, no. And one of the interesting things, a lot of these gourds, when they're young, when they're very young on the plant, they're really tasty squash. And as they age, however, they tend to thin out inside and become pretty much hollow. It's not like a pumpkin where you're going to have a lot to scoop out. Oh, and like I said, used for a storage of beans, used for ladles, especially for dipping water and stuff like that, used to attract birds to come into the garden. So what stage?
You know, they're big.
Good.
Now, they're different sizes, but what I'm wondering is, I have a Rodale Organic book, and they tell me that I should bring them inside and put them someplace warm to dry. And I talked to another girl who said, oh, no, no, you should leave them outdoors and let them cure outside. I just don't know what to do.
Okay, the vines are still alive.
Yes.
Okay. Are the vines still making new flowers?
They are.
Okay, get rid of those.
Okay.
I want you to start deflowering this plant because that's taking energy from the vine, making new little gourds that don't have a chance of ripening up. Do you have a lot of tiny gourds on the plant?
Not really.
Good, good, good. Go out and deflower your plant. So what you want to do is the oldest ones, the biggest ones, the fully grown ones, you want to start knocking on those, just like with your hand, like that. And right. you want to listen for a good, solid, hollow sound, a good, hard shell. And then if you can shake that gourd and hear the seeds inside rattling around, that gourd is ready to pick.
Okay.
And then you bring it inside and you just let it sit out in a cool, dry area. But you want them to come inside as dry as possible in every sense of the word. In other words, you want them to be as old as they can, for the skin to be as hard as they can, and ideally you should hear the seeds rattling around. You should also ideally harvest them during a dry stretch, not during a rainy stretch, not right after a rain. If we get like a dry week and they're predicting rain, that's when you want to start bringing in any gourds that make the rattling sound. You want to let them cure for at least a couple of months. You want them to be stone dry, bone dry.
Right.
And then you can choose what you're going to do, whether you're going to cut the tops off of them and pour the seeds out and use them to store something, whether
right.
you're going to cut little holes in them and hang them as birdhouses, whether you're going to carve them as ladles. A lot of people will like to paint or decorate them and give them out as gifts, but they're a lot of fun.
All right. Thanks so much. I'm excited now. Great.
Oh, yeah. You'll have a house full of gourds, Kyle.
I think so.
All right. You take care.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Alice, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Alice. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am just fine. Thank you. And where is Alice Great?
We live in Narberth, PA, just outside of Philly.
Very good. What can we do for Alice in Narberth?
Well, I was wondering about some trees that we have on our property. We just moved there, and it seems like the trees have been neglected for a while. So So we called up a tree company and asked them about pruning our trees. And they actually came last Friday and trimmed some dead branches out of two of the trees in our yard. But we were concerned that one of the trees might not make it kind of long term.
Well, you know, most landscape trees don't get trimmed, Alice. You know, when you talk about pruning trees to keep the centers open and stuff, you're mostly talking about like fruit trees and real disease prone trees. What are we talking about?
This is a sugar maple.
Okay. But typically such a tree would not be pruned, and this would be a terrible time to prune living branches. But you said they came out and identified dead branches and only removed those?
That's what they said.
Okay, well, that's excellent. You should always remove dead, diseased, or heavily damaged branches as soon as it's noticed. So I have to give this tree company double points. One, for taking down the dead stuff, and two, for resisting kind of a compulsion to prune them out of season. And why do you think these things need to be thinned?
Well, it just seems to be providing more shade than I think we were hoping to have.
Oh, well, that's a different story. That's a different story. Now, you can occasionally increase the amount of sunlight that hits an area by thinning out some portions of a tree. Now, it has to be done in the dead of winter, especially with maples. That's the only safe time to prune them. And you can never remove more than one-third of the tree. And as you probably found out, even with the dead branches, it can be expensive if the trees have any size.
Sure.
How much sun did you want to get through, and what do you want to achieve?
I think we were having trouble with the amount of grass that was growing in our backyard, and we're hoping that we could grow some grass back there.
Well, there's two issues here. First of all, you realize the shade of the trees is incredibly valuable in keeping your property cool and during the summertime. The second part is people often misunderstand why grass doesn't grow well around trees. Part of it is the shade thrown by the tree, but a lot of it has to do with the competition of the root system of the tree. Trees are bullies, so they're always going to take the most nutrients. They're always going to take water first. They're always going to take food first. So it's a very delicate balance. Plus, if the tree is throwing a lot of shade, there's only a couple of very specific type of grasses that can do well under there, and those grasses don't take a lot of foot traffic.
I think what we also had hoped to learn from the tree company we didn't get to with them. And that's why I contacted you guys.
Right.
I'm concerned about the health of the tree overall because the tree company indicated that they thought it might have carpenter ants. But they didn't give us a definitive yes or no or how to proceed with investigating that and or treating that if it's true.
Well, they did. They treated it already. Carpenter ants would only be infesting the dead wood.
Okay.
And, of course, if there is dead wood, carpenter ants are going to come into it. That's carpenter bees will infest sound wood. They go after any kind of soft wood. But carpenter ants are often doing you a favor. If you have carpenter ants in your home, that means there's a piece of wood that's gotten wet and it's rotting away. If you have carpenter ants in a tree, it's because there's dead parts of the tree. So if the tree company removed all the dead branches, the carpenter ants will move on to their next union job. There's like nothing left for them to do there. Now, how long have you lived in the house?
2 months.
Oh, okay. You will learn the health of the trees in the springtime.
Okay.
I would urge you not to do anything right away. First of all, if you've been in the house for 2 months, you got plenty to do, right?
You're right.
Come on, look at these windows. Are we going to remodel this bathroom? Look at this kitchen. How old is this sink? Come on. And you're looking at trees? Come on, look at the carpeting down here. Jeez, we got so much to do. So what you're going to do is you're going to watch how these trees leaf out in the spring. And if they leaf out beautifully and put on a good display of leaves, especially now that the dead branches have been removed, then those are healthy trees. If okay. they don't leaf out really well, then maybe they're at the end of their life and you need to think about removing them.
Great.
In the meantime,
okay,
get to work on those kitchen cabinets. Come on.
Yes, sir.
All right, Alice.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for a very unusual question of the week that we're calling Stalking the Wild American Strawberry. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, get us started, if you please.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we got this very sweet call from a guy named Jeremiah in Tennessee. He explained that he's now blind, but back when he was sighted, he stumbled onto a beautiful plant growing in the woods. He said that he researched it and thinks it might have been, quote, wild American strawberry bush. He called it, quote, the most amazing plant, and wanted to know where he could buy one and how to grow it.
You know, whenever I make a live appearance, people always ask me if I prepare my answers for this show in advance. But my response to Jeremiah clearly showed that the answer is no, no, no.
But you did venture a guess after he described the shape and size of the fruits.
Yeah, a lot of his description fit one of my favorite, quote, bad plants, the wineberry. Officially classified as an invasive, it's either an escaped ornamental plant or a raspberry relative from Asia that was brought here for raspberry breeding but escaped.
Either way, it got into the wild, and we here in the Northeast often see it growing on roadsides and in the woods. I didn't know the fruits were safe to eat until I started producing your show, and now I specifically look for them every summer.
Greedily, I trust.
Oh, yeah. They're delicious. And I thought you might be right with your guess, especially when he said it was acting like a vine, kind of crawling up the side of a tree. As you told him, wineberry canes are very long and arching, and because birds spread the fruits by lightening their load before they lift off, you often see the canes arching up tree trunks.
Yeah, but wineberries have deadly thorns. Those juicy berries come with a painful price. And Jeremiah said that if his plant had thorns, they were small and blunt.
Meanwhile, you're in there furiously thumbing through the big plant books you carry around and coming up empty. I'm in the control room trying computer searches, and all I could find was another of your favorite plants, the Alpine strawberry. A tiny but delicious ancestor of the modern strawberry that grows in small clumps and was originally a wild plant, and the weedy ground cover that lawn owners despise called wild strawberry, which always stays flat to the ground. So you did something fairly unique. You said you were stumped, but that you would try and find out for him. So did you go home and find it in like 5 minutes?
It took a lot longer than that. But I finally found what looks like a match at a website run by the Hilton Pond Research Center in South Carolina.
So, is it a vine?
No. Jeremiah said that his closest match online was even called a bush, even though his plant looked like a vine. I honestly only found it when I stopped using the word vine in my searches.
All right, give. What is it?
A staggeringly beautiful native ornamental whose common name is strawberry bush. The American part comes from its scientific name, Euonymus americanus. The Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center said that it's also known under many other names, including American strawberry bush, Brook Euonymus, Hearts a-bursting, Bursting Heart, and Wahoo.
Wahoo?
Hey, I just read them. I don't write them. Anyway, it's a member of the bittersweet family that is described as, quote, an airy, upright shrub that can reach 12 feet in height.
So it could look just like a vine in the right circumstances.
Absolutely. And the, quote, strawberries that so captivated Jeremiah are bright red fruits with a strawberry-ish texture that open up like pods, just the way he described, to allow seeds that look like bright orange corn kernels to hang down off the outer edges of the fruit capsule, like crystals hanging from a chandelier.
Oh, it sounds breathtaking.
Yes, and a warning, it could be that literally as well. Although the roots of the plants were used medicinally by Native Americans, the Hilton Pond Center warns that the berries are toxic, at least us humans. Apparently, some wild birds love them. And while the plant itself has to be protected from Bambi, the uniquely green winter branches are known as, quote, deer ice cream, horses and other livestock need to be kept away from it.
So can Jeremiah grow it?
Absolutely. And it's a great choice for any sun-challenged gardener, as it's an understory plant that naturally grows in shade. Light shade is best if you want lots of those colorful, but remember, non-edible fruits. But the shrub itself will do fine even in full shade.
Well, where can he get it?
It can be grown from those amazing-looking seeds, but the process is really tricky. Better to start with small plants, which are going to be available from a good number of nurseries, especially ones that specialize in native plants. Americanus, remember? It occurs naturally in heavily wooded areas across a wide section of the eastern United States. Just remember not to eat those pretty fruit-like things and to protect the plants from deer, especially in the winter. Well, that sure was an interesting look at a beautiful, shade-loving native plant, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, with links to more information about wine berries, the weed named wild strawberry, and those delicious little alpine strawberries, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes! My producer is threatening to slice these strawberries into my Cocoa Krispies if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Just remember to do one thing.
Please, please tell us where you live. Please tell us your garden's location. Please, please.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Parizuna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer is Al Banks. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar, You Bet Your Garden's web page wonders. That's not web-footed wonders, it is web page wonders. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our editor is Al Banks. Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Peter the Magic Christian is our ace production assistant. Our hired hand, Matt Hudecki, eats all of my alpine strawberries. I'm Mike McGrath, and I'm so happy that I was able to praise a native plant instead of an invasive. I'm going to pour myself a bowl of frozen wineberries, and then I'll see you again next week. What's the difference between a giant sequoia and a regular old sequoia? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll take a close look at the world's two tallest trees, plus your fabulous phone calls.